You're listening to Adventures in Jewish History with Rabbi Danny Sackstein.
Good afternoon and welcome to Soul to Soul. It's always great to be with you on a Wednesday afternoon, a warm Wednesday afternoon, live from our studios here in Johannesburg. You can let us know your thoughts or any feedback you have. Send us an SMS 34519. You can WhatsApp us on 061-895-0-1019. That's the WhatsApp number. So we'd love to hear from you. Let us know your thoughts. Today is, as we all know, the 8th of November. Tomorrow is a significant day in the calendar, the 9th of November. 9th of November is the anniversary of Kristallnacht. Kristallnacht took place on the 9th and 10th of November, 1938. And it was a very sad time for the Jews in Germany and all of the Jewish world. The Nazis unleashed their gangs of terror on the Jewish people in Germany, and over 100 Jews were killed, and over 1,000 synagogues were destroyed through the times of Kristallnacht. More than 7,000 Jewish businesses were destroyed, and Martin Gilbert, who's the great historian, says that of all the atrocities that took place in World War II by the Nazis, this was the one that was most known to the world. It was immediately reported upon and became public knowledge around the world quite quickly, and really marked the beginning of the final solution and the destruction of European Jewry. So Kristallnacht was the start of that time, and one could only imagine the great horror of Jews living in Germany being subjected to violence and to destruction of their property, to such ugly hatred and anti-Semitism. And I think it's important that we bear in mind, so tomorrow is the 79th anniversary of Kristallnacht. Next year will be the 80th anniversary. And it's important as Jews that we remember our history and remember that there are those that have wanted to destroy us, and those that have succeeded in causing great damage and destruction to the Jewish people. And unfortunately, we live in a world where anti-Semitism is still very much present and around. And we need to bear in mind that those that publicly declare that they want to destroy us are serious, and they're not pretending, and they're not just a small group of radicals, of extremists, but there are many millions of people that continue to have similar views, that want to destroy the Jewish people, want to destroy the state of Israel, want to wipe out any existence in the land of Israel. And we need to hear those words loud, and we need to take them very seriously, and we need to do what is necessary to defend ourselves and to protect ourselves against such views and against such dangers to the Jewish people. Let's continue. What I wanted to talk about today is something that the Torah emphasizes in our history, and a great lesson that we learned from the Torah, a lesson that is eternal, because all the lessons that we read about in the Torah are God's communication to us, God's messages to us. And there's a particular incident where God is telling us a very strong message, and it's important that we hear that message and that we think about it. That is the beginning of the Pasha we're going to read this week, Pasha's Chaya Sarah. We read about Avraham wanting to bury his wife Sarah. And Avraham, he identifies the place where he wants to bury his beloved Sarah. Obviously, Avraham is distraught. Sarah was his soulmate. Sarah was his life's partner in the holy work that they did in changing, literally changing the future course of history as a result of their tremendous achievements. And together they built everything, and they worked on these connecting to God and sharing the ideas of monotheism as a remarkable team. So Abraham now wants to honor Sarah in the best way, and he feels that a particular field in Hebron would be the appropriate place to bury Sarah. In fact, it's a cave. It's the cave that we call Machpelah. According to our holy tradition, it's the cave where Adam and Chava, Adam and Eve, are buried. And Abraham then goes about purchasing that piece of land in order to bury his wife Sarah over there. and he approaches the Bnei Ches. The Bnei Ches are the people living in that area, and he asks them who owns this field, and he says to them that he wants to purchase this field. He wants to pay a market value for it in order to own it and bury his wife Sarah at the field. And the Bnei Ches introduce him to Ephron. Ephron is an interesting character, and Ephron is the owner of that field. And there's a significant interaction between Avraham and Ephron that the Torah goes to great lengths to describe. We know that the Torah is very, very short with its words, and there's not an extra letter. We learn out many halachas even from one extra letter in the Torah. So the question is, why is there so much detail about Avraham and his interaction with Ephron? And what is there to learn from all of this that the Torah emphasizes it to such a degree? So please stay with us. In a moment, we'll discuss it in more detail.
You're listening to Adventures in Jewish History with Rabbi Danny Sackstein.
We're looking at the burial of our matriarch Sarah Imenu, the great leader of the Jewish people, together with her husband Avraham, who changed the future of and destiny of all humankind. Sarah passes away, and Avraham's distraught, and he identifies the place where he wants to bury her, and he wants to purchase this piece of land from Ephron. Ephron, who was he was part of the Bnei Ches, and he was somebody who owned that particular piece of land. His name was Ephron ben Sochar, and Avraham approaches him. Ephron recognizes that Avraham is a holy man, but then eventually he sells the field to Avraham. So it's interesting that we see that as a result of this whole interaction, that Ephron is become, his name is not written in full in the Torah. So the verse says that Ephron speaking to Avraham, and he says, Avraham says to Avraham, Arba meos shekel kesef beni venechamahi. What is, 400 shekels? That's what was obviously the value of that land. What is that? What does it mean, in other words, you don't have to pay. I understand you're a man of God. I understand you're a righteous person. And there's no need for you to have to pay. I'm going to give you the field. That's what he says in Pasuk Yudal. Then Pasuk Tes Vav, Ephron continues and says, V'yashkol Avraham le Ephron, esa kesef. So Avraham presents the money to Ephron, in the presence of the Bnei Ches, and he gave him the 400 shekels, and it was hard currency, says Rashi. In other words, it was, there were different kinds of shekalim, smaller ones and bigger ones. This is what the bigger ones, in other words, which is universal. It was used. It was like dollars. It was, the transaction was done in dollars, because that's a currency that could be used everywhere. So when it came down to the actual sale, Ephron is pretty hard line. And he's non-compromising, and he wants hard currency, and he wants, a high value of the land. So the question is that we see that there's a, the Midrash quotes the Pasuk in Mishlei, in Proverbs, where King Solomon says, Nivhal lachon ishra, that the person who trembles, who is so taken up with possessions and assets, the evil person, v'lo yada shechasel oilam, this person doesn't know that he's causing himself to be lacking forever. He's going to lose out for eternity. So the Chazal tell us this is applying to Ephron. Now, the question is, though, what was so bad? What did Ephron do that was so bad that he's called Ishra, that he's called a bad and evil person? And what was so severe about it? So our sages explain that, Ephron was perfectly entitled to charge Avraham for the land, and he is perfectly entitled to take the money, and it was a fair agreement, and they made a transaction. Avraham buys the land. The problem, however, was that Ephron first said to Avraham that you could have it for nothing, that this land's yours, that what's, 400 shekels between friends, I recognize who you are, and that you a Nasi Elohim, a man of God, and that you're a righteous person, and therefore it would be a great schus, a great honor, a great merit for me to assist you and to help you on your journey and to help you bury your wife at this sad time for you. So Ephron makes that realization. He's aware of this opportunity to help Avraham. However, And he's genuine at that point, because the Torah tells us that he says, what's a 400 shekels between us? In other words, the Torah wouldn't say that if he wasn't genuine. The Torah's not, you know, talking about swindlers and people. He obviously meant it at that moment. That's why he's quoted in the Torah. He was sincere at that moment. However, then there's a switch. What happened? What's the switch? The switch takes place when he sees the money. Once Avraham is insistent, he wants to pay. But once Ephron sees those wads of cash, once he sees the notes, he can't resist. He can't hold back anymore. And he says, okay, you know, hand it over. You give me the 400 hard currency. Otherwise, I'm not seeing. In other words, what do we see about Ephron's personality over here? That the minute Avraham actually brings out the money, all of those wonderful values and those altruistic commitments that he made, and understanding and being this magnanimous giver to help Avraham, all of that flies out the window the minute the money appears. In other words, on the one hand, Ephron has a particular value system that he may subscribe to in his head, in his mind. But on the other hand, when it comes to tachlis, when it comes to the real thing, so all of those principles fall short. They all disappear. They evaporate instantly. And Ephron shows that he's got no real backbone, and he doesn't stick to the principles, the values that he originally aspired to. And as Rashi says, "Ama harabe afilu ma'at v'lo asa." So Ephron says a lot. He's a big talk. He's a real big talker. And yes, of course, Abraham, you know, please take the field. But he really, when it comes to the reality, he doesn't do anything. It's a big talk and no action. And the reason why the Torah is emphasizing and puts so much detail into this incident with Ephron is the Torah wants us to learn this vital, critical message in all of our lives. And that is that although we may commit ourselves to certain values, it's a long way to go until we actually live by those principles. And the real spiritual work of a human being in this world is to remain true to those values. Is when we test it, when the heat is on, when we find ourselves in that incident, that we stay strong and we remain loyal to our commitments. The Chofetz Chaim said that the longest distance in the world is the distance between the head and the heart. What does it mean? That we can have, you know, ideas and principles and values and hopefully spiritual Torah values that we subscribe to and that we understand are true and that we commit ourselves to. But the distance between that and actually living that way, actually implementing those principles in our lives, is a very long way. And that's why we actually say that every day. The pasuk, the verse from Devarim, and we say it in Aleinu every day, V'yadata hayoim v'ashevusa el levavecha, ki Hashem hu Elohim ein od. That where a person should know today, and place it on your heart. It's not enough just to know. We've got to v'ashevusa el levavecha. We've got to place it on our hearts. That Hashem is God, b'shemayim al b'atzmitachas, in the heavens above, and the earth below, ein od, there's nothing else. Everything in this world is a manifestation of God. Is God is the oneness of God, and God is one both in the heavens and on the earth. So it's not good enough just to know that and to intellectually understand that, which is a very obvious, simple understanding. You know, there must have been a sophisticated creator when we see this magnificent world that we live in. It's obvious. It just takes basic, objective, elementary logic to see that, to say the world came about as a result of evolution, as a result of accident, is absolutely ludicrous. It's madness to say that it's all random and chance. Maybe Hashem created the world, there was some sort of evolving of species, that's possible. But there must have been a creator. The world screams out to us with that obvious fact. But it's not good enough just to know that obvious, basic, elementary thinking that there's a creator, but to live with, to actually behave and live our lives based on what the creator wants of us is a whole nother story, is a whole different thing, and requires way beyond just intellectual knowledge, but it requires us to actually integrate and internalize those ideas, to make them real, to make them a part of us, to make them penetrate within our being to the extent that they change our behavior. So that's the work. The work is to understand it and then to let it integrate into our lives and become a part of us. Unlike Ephron. Ephron was somebody who, unfortunately, maybe he knew what was right, but he didn't live according to those ideas. And when it came down to the sale, so he took the money, and he was a very hard negotiator. So that's why the Torah says, when the pasuk says "V'yishkal Avraham le'Ephron," when Avraham presented the money to Ephron, the Ephron is chaser. It's without a vav. It's an ayin pei resh nun. The one letter is missing. The reason why it's chaser, says Rashi, is because he was a big talk and he didn't do. His chaser, there's no vav to tell us that Ephron is a person who's lacking. He's a person who's missing aspects. He's a person who's not complete. Because to see it on the one hand, but not to deliver and carry it through on the other, represents a person who's really is lacking in their life and a person who's missing the essential qualities of what a Adam Shalem of a complete person has. And so that's a very powerful message for all of us and something that we should strive to achieve, not to be chaser, lacking like Ephron, but to be complete and Shalem like Abraham and Sarah. And in fact, we see examples where the Torah tells us about the Shlemus, about the wholeheartedness and completion of Avraham and Sarah. The Torah says, in this week's parsha, Avraham zaken ba b'yamim, that Avraham was zaken, he became older, he became of age, ba b'yamim, and he came with his days. So the obvious question is, what's the ba b'yamim? What does it mean he came with his days? You know, he reached old age. That's superfluous. That seems to be redundant. The Zohar HaKadosh, the classic work of Jewish mysticism, tells us that those words, Baba Yamim, are making reference to the fact that Avraham arrived at old age with all of his days, which means that Avraham accomplished spiritual achievements each day of his life. A day didn't go by without Avraham actually fighting that battle against the Yetzer Hara, and living, standing true to the principles by which he lived, overcoming the temptations and the drives and the desires and the whims of the Yetzer Hara and of our instinct for self-gratification. Every day of his life, Abraham was able to overcome those tests and to arrive at the end of his life with all of his days. He had achieved what he was supposed to. He had overcome those challenges and those ordeals throughout the days of his life. And therefore, when he arrives at old age, he's carrying with him those days and those achievements, which is something quite incredible, something quite significant. That's why the Torah mentions it, and that was the great achievement of Abraham. So we contrast that with Ephron, who couldn't deliver on the principles that he subscribed to, that he believed in. And he was not Baba Yamin Ephron, he was Chaser, who was missing. Whereas Avraham came with his days, he was Shalem. And we see a similar thing when it comes to Sarah. This week's parsha is called Chaye Sarah because it starts out with the burial of Sarah. And the first pasuk, the first verse of the parsha is V'yu Chaye Sarah. And these were the life of Sarah, Mea Shana, 100 years. For Esrim Shana and 20 years, for Sheva Shanim and 7 years, Shnei Chaye Sarah. These were the life of Sarah. So Rashi asks straight away on the first pasuk, why that Lakach Nichtav Shana Bakol Klalu Klal? Why does it say years each time? In other words, it says 100 years and 20 years and 7 years. It should just say Mea 100 Esrim V'Sheva Shanim. 20 and 7, 127. That's how one usually speaks in Hebrew. 127, Mea Eshim V'Sheva. But why does it say Mea Shana V'Eshim Shana V'Sheva Shanim? Why does it say Shana each time after each category? So Rashi says, Loi Malacha Shekol Echad Nidrash La'atzmo. It's come to telling us that each of these categories, the 100, the 20, and the 7, we should make a drosha from, we should learn an inference from. Bas Kuf Kabas Chaf Lachet, that when she was 100, she was like a 20-year-old with regards to sin. Ma bas chaf lo chata. Just as we say, a 20-year-old does not have a record of sin. Why? Sherei eno bas oinshim, because we only become obligated of sins in mina shemayim, from the heavens, sins above, from the age of 20. So just as Sarah at the age of 20 had a clean slate, so too at the age of 100 had a clean slate with regards to sin. Af bas kuf belochet, or bas chaf kebas zayin liyoyfi, and concludes Rashi, from the Bereishis Rabbah, from the Midrash, that she was at the age of 20, she was the age of 7 with regards to beauty. She was, had a very beautiful, innocent look. So that was the greatness of Sarah, that she even at the age of 100, had not sinned. Why not? Because Sarah was somebody who knew, she lived by the principles that she believed, and she was able to implement them in her everyday life. And that's what the Midrash says. There's an amazing Midrash that says, Yodea Hashem Yemei Temimim. Hashem knows the days of the wholesome ones, of the complete ones. V'nachalaschem lo'olam tiyeh. And their inheritance will be eternal, will be forever. In other words, Hashem identifies, and Hashem knows when people are tamim, when we are complete, when we are together, when we are deliver on the principles by which we claim to live by. When we, and once we do that, when we are tamim, so then it is forever. V'nachalaschem lo'olam tiyeh. So once we are live according to, we deliver properly and sincerely, and we're stable, and we're consistent, and we're loyal to the values of our lives, so that becomes real, and that then becomes eternal. Then we are able to hand it down to our children. Then once we are tamim, we're able to pass it down. The contrast of that, of course, is Ephron, who's chaser. Ephron is not tamim, he's not wholesome, he's not complete. He's missing, there's a letter missing from words. He's chaser because he doesn't deliver on the values and principles which he claims to live by. Whereas Avram and Sarah are tamim. They complete. Avram Baba Yamim. Sarah is at 100. She's at 20 with regards to sin, because they are tamimim. They complete, wholesome in Hashem's eyes, and therefore they have an inheritance which they pass down to their children's, and that is eternal. So here we are. You know how many years later? We're 3,500 years later, and we're still living in the wake of Avram and Sarah. We still are drawing for. We are harvesting the fruits that they planted 3,500 years ago, because they were tamim. So that's a very powerful lesson that the Torah is emphasizing to us, is we need to live a life of spiritual consistency. We need to be loyal to the principles and values of the Torah and of God. How often do we come across a person who's not stable? Unfortunately, it's very sad when people are not stable. And, you know, sometimes people that have a tendency for instability with medication, it makes a big difference and can bring stability to their lives, which is wonderful and, of course, encouraged. But very also, ever so often, we come across individuals that unfortunately are not stable. And it's very difficult to develop a relationship with such a person, because, you know, you never know what the next day is going to bring. And on the one hand, they're your best friend and they, you know, you can interact with them in a normal way. And the next day they may be manic and they're all over the place and they don't even want to have anything to do with you. And so it's quite demoralizing and difficult to deal with a person's unstable. Well, it's the same spiritually. Spiritually, very often we, you know, lose our stability, and we wavering, and we, you know, we're neither here nor there. And depending on what the circumstance is, we follow that drive and desire. In other words, it's all very well. We make our commitments and we make our resolutions on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And when we make those resolutions, we are sincere, we are genuine, we are committed to that, and we understand what's right, and we want to do what's right. But when we're faced with that desire, with that drive, with that passion, whether it's to eat something, whether it's to say something, whether it's to do something, so we don't have the backbone and the staying power and the integrity to stand up to the test and to pull through that temptation, that challenge, that desire, whatever it is that the Yetzirah is putting in front of us and testing us with. So, you know, Abraham was strong, Sarah was strong. They were able to stand firm despite the tests and challenges that were put in the way. Unfortunately, that is very rare in our generation. And we so easily are seduced and we are so easily taken off track and follow our drives and our desires. And we, you know, during that moment of temptation, so all those great values are very quickly forgotten. We have, unfortunately, spiritual amnesia. And we forget about all of those principles of God and all of the mitzvahs of what God's commanded us to do. And we lose ourselves and we give into those passions and drives and desires so easily. So that is the tremendous contrast that the Torah draws between Abraham and Sarah and on the other side, Ephron. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to Adventures in Jewish History with Rabbi Danny Sackstein.
We're discussing the great contrast between Avram and Sarah, and on the other hand, Ephron, where Ephron, the Torah highlights how Ephron does not deliver on his original commitments, and he unfortunately drives a very hard bargain with regards to Avraham wanting to buy the field. And the reason is because although he subscribes to great values, he when the situation presents itself, so all of those beautiful lofty ideas evaporate and are non-existent. So we've been discussing the importance to develop a consistency in our lives and not to be at the whim of our Yetzer Hara. And when, you know, one drive presents itself, we follow that desire and that temptation and that pleasure that we are after. But we have the strength to say no and the ability to be loyal to God and the mitzvahs, no matter how difficult and how challenging that may be. So whatever it is that we may commit to, you know, perhaps it's very difficult for us to be on the level of Avram and Sarah. You know, Avram Baba Yamim, he had all his days with him. There wasn't a day that he didn't make the most of these opportunities which God presented him with and overcame the Yetzirah. Sarah is 100, is the same level of sin as she was at 20. Unbelievable. These are spiritual giants, which are, it's very difficult for us to fathom the level of these great spiritual superheroes. However, we need to try and in some way implement that in our lives. It's with regards to some aspect of our behavior, we need to develop this consistency and this loyalty to our principles and our values. So, you know, perhaps we should start small. And the Musas Forum speak about this a lot, that we shouldn't try and conquer the world in one day and change ourselves instantly. That's just not realistic. But we should identify single aspects of our personalities or single commitments in our lives and stick to those. For example, let's say with regards to learning, we all need to be learning. Every Jew needs to be learning Torah, because if we don't learn Torah, we remain ignorant. And even the greatest Talmidei Chacham, they call the Talmid Chacham, because they constantly are learning. We need to learn and we need to add to what we know and we need to develop and grow. Because if we don't, we become jaded and it becomes a burden and eventually we throw off the yoke, God forbid, of Torah Mitzvah. So the learning is the fuel that drives the energy and fire of spiritual growth. So we should commit ourselves to learning. And what do we learn? We you know, so if we make a commitment to learning, we should stick to that, shiur we go to once a week, or to that chavrusa we have every day, or to that group that we are part of that we learn together with. But we should stick to it. And not when, you know, there's a bit of traffic, or it's a bit hot, and I'm tired, or I'm hungry, or I've got a bit of a headache, you know, there it goes, it's gone. We need to be solid and firm and consistent, and have integrity in terms of our commitments. If we think back to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you know, did we make those resolutions? Did we take something on? Were they today? You know, 2 months later, are they still part of our consciousness? Are we still loyal and sticking to them? So by building some sense of spiritual permanence and consistency, that's the foundation of our life. And that's what the Midrash is telling us, that Hashem knows the Yemei Tamimim. If we tamim in our days, if we wholesome in the certain things that we do, so that we will that will become ours, and we will have that as an inheritance. We'll pass it on as an inheritance for those that follow us. So it's not a simple thing. It's quite a big ask, but just to be conscious of this reality, of the reality of us as human beings, and that even though we may know what's right, it's very different to actually living that way. And so it's critical that we commit ourselves to at least something in some area. Maybe it's tefillah, maybe it's davening, maybe saying Shema in the morning and the night every day, which is a Torah commandment, to be able to commit to that and to stick to it. You know, maybe going to a minyan once a week or a minyan every day. But we need to be strong in our commitments and not be flimsy and easily distracted and diverted and tempted by the Yetzer Hara. So that's the contrast of Avram and Sarah as opposed to Ephron, and that's the great lesson we learn from the beginning of this week's Parsha. And it really is consistency that makes greatness in a person. And when we're strong and when we're loyal and when we stick to our guns, so that's how we develop and grow, and we withstand the winds of change and the winds of test and the winds of desire and the challenges that face us. And the Yetzer Hara doesn't want that. The Yetzer Hara wants to prevent us from being loyal and solid and stable and consistent in our spiritual practices. And therefore, the Yetzer Hara is going to try to do everything it can to create an imbalance and to ensure that we're unstable in our spiritual journey. And we need to fight that, and we need to be strong. And then, please God, we could fulfill what the Midrash says. Yodea Hashem Yemei Tamimim, V'nachalaschem Lo'olam Tiyeh. That will live and endure forever as the legacy of Abraham and Sarah has endured all of these centuries, 3,500 years later. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to Adventures in Jewish History with Rabbi Danny Sackstein.
Let's close off with an interesting idea. We mentioned that the Torah tells us Avraham Zaken Baba Yamim, that Abraham became elderly. He reached a ripe old age, and he came with his days, Baba Yamim. So we explained it earlier to say that he made spiritual accomplishments each of those days. So he had something to show for himself at the end of his life in terms of how he had lived his life and each day, the challenges that each day presented itself with. So let's maybe look at that from another point of view. And that is, we see our life, the lives that we live, the world that God created. We have a dimension of time. We have past, we have present, and we have future. And we're locked in the present. So that which we experience can only be done so in the present. We don't experience what happened in the past or what will happen in the future. We live through the present. Sometimes the present is so intense, is so overwhelming. For example, let's say if we're in pain, we've got a severe headache or we have some other sort of pain. So we're so taken up with that in the present that there's no space for anything else. And we just want to alleviate that pain and that suffering. When we are younger, so usually in the younger years, the prime of our lives, we are quite focused on the present. And we are, you know, very much taken up with the hectic routine of our days and the activities that we're experiencing. But as we get older, as people get older, so they have more time to reflect on the past in the present. And that has a stronger bearing on their present, what they did in the past. Being a rabbi, very often one does get exposed to people that are going through that phase in their lives and are reflecting on the past, and they may be approaching old age or approaching as a result of illness, you know, they're thinking about their life and what they've done. And it is an interesting time for people to be reflecting on their past. And I remember one such incident where a person who had been a very successful businessman and had accomplished great things in his business career, this person was suffering of a terminal illness. And I spent a lot of time with him in his last days. He has unfortunately passed on. And he did confide in me, and he told me that he had many, many regrets. And most of the regrets that he had were the hours that he spent in the office and at the expense of spending that time with his spouse, with his children, with his grandchildren. And as he is facing the last months of his life, he was trying to make up for that lost time, but he felt a great pain and remorse that although he had put all that time and energy into the business and he had made a lot of money, he felt that it was a bad call, and that it was he regretted sacrificing, building stronger relationships with his family in the pursuit of his economic success. And I was quite moved by that, and I think it's quite significant that we should think in this way and think about how, of course, we need to make a living and put time and effort into our businesses, into our careers, but we also need to have a balanced life, and we need to spend significant time and quality time with our loved ones and build the relationships we're supposed to, and we should spend significant time building ourselves spiritually as well in terms of investing in our relationship with the Creator, with our Kodesh Baruch, with God. Now, of course, that's the greatness of Shabbos. Shabbos is the great and holy day where everything shuts down. All of those external inputs and distractions are put aside, and we have time to spend quality time with our family, and we have time to think about our spiritual lives, our journey, our relationship with Hashem. We have time to think about that Shabbos is the day, Zeichel L'Maaseh Bereishis, that we keep Shabbos because we know there's a Creator. God created the world. That's why we keep Shabbos. So by observing the Shabbos, that indicates that we believe that God created the world, that there's a Creator. So that's perhaps how we could understand this pasuk of Avraham. It says, Avraham Zaken Baba Yamim. He came with his days, which means he didn't have any regret in his life, that he looked back in his latter years on how he spent the prime of his life and what he invested in, and he brought those days with him. He didn't have regrets. He didn't have remorse. He felt that he lived a life that was worthy, that was he invested his time correctly in the right values, in the right priorities, in the right pursuits in his life. And that's why the Torah says, "And Hashem bairech es Avraham b'kol." Hashem blessed Avraham with everything. And when Avraham passes away, the Torah says, "V'yamas Avraham b'seva," and Abraham died at a good old age, b'seva toiva, good old age, zaken v'savea, and he was mature and content with his life. He was baba yamim. He felt that he had used his time correctly and properly. And what a great blessing. You know, you don't get a bigger blessing than that, having used our time correctly, because time is so valuable. Life is so precious, and it's fleeting. And before we know it, it's gone. It passes very quickly. And so we need to use our time correctly and have the right values and priorities. And as we said in the beginning, like Avraham and Sarah, stick to those values. And even when we test it, and even when the heat is on and the Yetzer Hara is trying to push us away and divert us from the correct path, we say we stand our ground and we resist the temptations of the physical desires, of the food, of the whatever, of the conversation, whatever it may be. We're strong and remain loyal to our principles. And we also need to use our days wisely and ensure that we investing in the right things, in the relationships with our families, in our relationship with God, and we don't give ourselves entirely over to the pursuit of wealth and of affluence, because there's a great expense, there's an opportunity cost, and at the end of the of days, we don't want to sit with regret and remorse that we used our energy and time in the wrong way. So, Mirza Hashem, we should learn from the great spiritual giants, which are at the foundation, at the beginnings of the history of the Jewish people, and we should all be zeicha, merit to follow in the illustrious footsteps of Avraham and of Sarah. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day.